You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
And welcome to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. Tommy Ahlquist, Kevin Miller. Tommy, the subject of this podcast reminds me of what Lou Dobbs used to say. Education is the great liberator in our society today.
Boy, we've been excited. We are in for an episode today. I don't know if anyone truly knows the story of what's happened here in our valley with CWI. And then I'll tell you, on the campaign trail, Kevin, you go around the state and you look at what's working in education, what's not working in education. And there are plenty of examples of both. But I'll tell you, on the working side, there's no better example of money's going towards getting our kids into jobs in Idaho better than what's happening at CWI. So we've wanted President Glanton to be here for a while. He's joining us today. And I hope, you know, we have a lot of subjects on this podcast.
Sure.
We have education, politics, business. But what's happening here with CWI really is connecting the business community with families, with jobs, with earnings. We'll get into that today. So very excited, President Bert Glanton, to have you here today. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's really a pleasure and honor to be here.
Well, good to have you with us here. You know, the idea of the vision for CWI, if you could go back to the idea, do you think it would be as successful as it's been today?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think we'd put a plan together literally in the first couple of months of operating, and we put a five-year plan together, and in 18 months, we exceeded every one of those expectations. We blew the growth out of the model. Obviously, College Western Idaho has been recognized as the fastest growing community college in the history of community colleges. We are just well over 33,000 students now, and it's not just the students. I think the amazing thing about the College of Western Idaho, and Tommy, you kind of brought it up from the standpoint of the opportunities it's created for the Western Treasure Valley. We have a speech and debate team that's won seven national titles, and we're only 9 years old. I mean, we've got colleges that have been 40, 50 years old, never won a national title in speech and debate. We brought 17 awards back from our Phi Theta Kappa, which is the Honor Society for Community Colleges. It's not just the size of the institution, it's the quality, it's the faculty and the staff that are cranking out and providing excellent opportunities for students in the Western Treasure Valley.
So we'll get into this, but before we start.
Sure.
Because I'd love to hear more about you. Seriously, President, tell us a little bit, because I believe that there was pent-up demand. I believe that. Mm-hmm. I believe this idea of, hey, let's effectively connect kids to jobs. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, people follow people. Mm-hmm. Leadership matters. Mm-hmm. I've watched you. Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about your past, your history and leadership and the community, your family. And then how you started this journey.
Well, I come from a pretty humble family. My dad worked 36 years on the railroad. My mom was a secretary in the school districts, in the school district in Seattle, born and raised a middle-class family. I was actually the first one of my three brothers to go through college. My older brother went in the Navy first and then came back and finished up after I did. I literally had a job from 5-6 years old all the way through. We were... I don't make much of this, but we were entertainers when we were small. My mom said that if you learn music and it's a disciplinary thing. We practiced 2-3 hours a day, and my younger brother and I played musical instruments. I played 9 different instruments as I was growing up. We played at retirement homes and those kinds of things. So it was a real work ethic. I mean, I was raised by a middle-class family, strong work ethic. Always had a job or two, like my dad did. My dad all worked on the railroad and did all kinds of things. And my dad was the one that said, you know, my boys are going to college. He didn't get to go to college. My boys are going to college. And so he made it possible for us to have the crappiest jobs every summer so that we were motivated to get through school and knew the value of getting a good quality education. And I spent 2 years in the Army, active duty, 6 years reserve. And when I came out of that, I came back, finished up my degree, finished my master's. And education was always a really big thing, very, very important. But also the work ethic, which really drew it in, was the fact that I taught as an adjunct instructor part-time when I first graduated from college. And then things got a little lean for a while. And I had a corporation who offered me a job. I worked in corporate life for 13 years. And then I came back into education later on in life. So there's always been a high work ethic, a high strong value for quality, for excellence, and trying also to figure out what is in the next best interest to move the needle, to move things forward. I would say my brothers and I have always been kind of in all our different industries. My older brother was an accountant. I was in education and corporate life and food service operations. And my younger brother's been in the grocery store business for his 50 years. So it's been the kind of thing where what do we do? How do we best serve the customer? What's the next best thing? And how do we move whatever industry in? How do we move that forward and make it better, brighter, quicker for the customer and for the general community?
So I heard you say work ethic.
Oh, absolutely.
I heard you say innovation.
Absolutely.
And I heard you say customers, the community, giving back. I
mean, exactly. I think
those are the characteristics that kind of define you. Tell us a little bit about the CWI experience. A lot of listeners out there know CWI, mm-hmm. but give us a little history of the spinoff, how it started, and just a little bit about the history of CWI.
CWI back in 2000, I think seven was when they first started having conversations. I actually was the president of Treasure Valley Community College, just 45 miles west of here. And then I went to Denver, Colorado, and was down there. And our family's from the Northwest. And my wife was born and raised in Polkdale, Idaho. So we were always looking at the Western Treasure Valley as a place where we'd come back to sooner or later anyway. But the fact of the matter was when they announced that they were going to start a community college, and it was going to be a spinoff from BSU, but they had to get the community to vote, to tax themselves to do this. And I got to tell you something. When I first heard it, I thought, that's never going to happen. Today's world, get the community to tax themselves to start another college. Boise had, four or five universities here. They had all kinds of educational resources. But a community college is uniquely different. And the people that started CWI and the founding board and the founding fathers of getting it off the ground, they convinced the community to tax themselves to start this college. That's a huge kudos to the Western Treasure Valley, the people of the Western Treasure Valley and Idaho, and say, no, we need this different kind of operation. It was amazing. They through the ballot, they passed. They got it put in place. They got an administration put in place. Five people, I think five appointed original board members, then got five administrators, and they started the process. And I came in June of 2009, and the first class group started in that January 2009. And I'll never forget the statesman in particular, Bill Roberts, good friend, who's since retired. He and I had conversations when I first came here. I called my wife when I was being interviewed, and I said, I can't believe this. I said, here's a board that's all on the same page. They have the same vision. They're committed. They're dedicated. They're talking together. They don't have an axe to grind. They're actually focused on student success and affordable access. And I said, that in my mind is a winner. That's a big time winner in any game. So it was kicked off. And when I interviewed to come up, my wife thought, wow. I had a lot of my colleagues and friends in the educational business said, Mike, Bert, what are you thinking? You know, you're going to go start a startup company. It's a startup company. It's chaos. It's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. Well, I'll tell you, certain people, there's an adrenaline rush to that. If you have the kinds of opportunities to do something brand new, something different, create it from scratch and just kick it out of the park, that is an adrenaline rush. It paralyzes some people, but it's an adrenaline rush for other people. And to me, it was an opportunity to build an organization from scratch, create a new, different kinds of community college, meet the new challenges of education, which we have. Education has a 200-year-old history, which is broke. And basically, we have to look at education differently in terms of how we deliver it and what we do with it. And I think our most recent challenge, of course, we started with 1,209 students. And I never forget Bill Roberts saying, front page of the paper was, CWI fails to meet enrollment goal. And I called Bill up and I said, Bill, I said, most community colleges over the last 60 years, most community colleges would start with 500 students. And it'll take them 5 years to get to 2,000 students. And I said, we started with 1,200. And he said, well, no. The board said that they were going to start with 1,800 students. You only got 1,200, so you failed, didn't meet your goal. Well, the next semester, the enrollment was at 3,600 students. And that literally blew the lid off. I had people from national organizations calling, saying, what are you doing out there in Boise, Idaho? What's going on? What is happening? And I remember the governor asked, where are these students coming from? And I said, they've always been here. The students have always been here, but when you have universities, a community college is open access. Anybody can come. We take them the way they are. We figure out how to make them successful. We find new and creative ways to make them get through the angst of getting back into higher education. And we did it. We met it. We got it. 3,600 the second semester, 4,900 the third semester, and now we're at 33,000. That has blown any record out of the books in terms of what community colleges have done across the country. So we really are the model of how growth can really affect some kind of major impact. But again, Tommy and Kevin, I'd go back to it's not just growth. We have an administrative team. We change our structure every year. You want to talk about a startup company? We have changed our administrative structure every year. And in the last year and a half, it's been real enlightening. And it could have been depressing or down. We lost a $180 million bond. We needed 66 2/3% to build out the campus with the original plan that we had. Just last November, we missed by 0.07%, 133 votes out of 280,000 votes. We missed actually getting a health science building built. But you know what's happened is that didn't deter any one of our faculty, staff, or administration. We said, okay, the public's spoken. Maybe we're not looking at this right. We're sitting down now and we're reassessing how we deliver, what we do, and we talk about agile lean management. I've got a team of administrators and faculty and staff that are saying, how do we do it differently? How? Because we know that a typical community college in an environment like this will serve about 6.5-7% of the population. CWI today is not serving 3% of the population. So if we were really at normal market share, we would be at 65,000 students today. So if we're going to do that, how are we going to do that differently than what we're doing right now? And it comes to actually looking at what they call ABC. We look at adaptable, blended, competency-based, not the typical Carnegie unit where they sit in a class for 16 weeks and if they pass a test at 70%, they get 3 credits. We're talking about competency-based education, restructuring blended and adaptable type delivery systems. We have one of the most unique models in Western CAT, where we worked with a corporation for a year and a half, and they said, we need diesel technicians, and we need them not in 2 years. We need them in a year. Well, we have a 13-month program in partnership with Western CAT where they have partnered up with us. And in 13 months, we take a student from scratch. We turn them into a diesel technician. They go to school 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, like a regular job. And they come out 100% graduation, 100% placement. And that's the new model for a lot of the professional technical programs. And a lot of the academic programs are looking at a whole new delivery of adaptable, blended, and competency-based, where maybe we can move a student through in an 8-week period where they can get a whole course in 8 weeks. And if they have success in that, that will encourage him to go to the next one and the next one and the next one. We might be able to turn 60, 70,000 students with the facilities we have right now. And that's the kinds of conversation we're having is we didn't drop back and say, oh, woe is us. Our bond failed and we didn't do this. Our board is now sitting there saying, okay, do we go back out again or don't we? Or do we rethink how we do business, like basic business principles, like everybody else does in the world? How do we maybe do business differently? And that's a new concept to a lot of higher education.
Bert, when we talk about Inspire Excellence, we're always looking to give people tips. The first thing I'd like to ask is, how'd you get the job? And this is a job you wanted. Obviously, you're qualified, but that doesn't mean that you get it. You leave it in the hands of other people. Thankfully, they made the right decision. Mm-hmm. But how did you get the job? And can you give us some correlations to others that may be looking for that dream job? Or maybe you're a student at CWI or you're Kevin Miller and looking for a good job.
Basically,
what do you mean?
Is this an announcement?
No, there's no,
I don't know if this is an announcement, but I thought we had a great partnership going here.
We do.
You're already looking to jump ship.
No, not at all.
All right, good.
I'm not defensive at all.
You know, Kevin, in the interview with the original board, I will never forget, one of the big things is I think you got to be authentic. You got to be honest. You got to be trustworthy. You got to be authentic. There were two or three times in the interview that I actually told my wife, I said, I'm going to tell him what I think. I'm going to tell him the truth. And I will never forget one of the questions that was brought up. And to this day, I think it was Mark Dunham or Jerry, one of the original board members says, well, what is your position on tenure for faculty? And I just stopped dead in my tracks and put my head down and I said, it does not serve higher education in the community college. It does not serve them well. And the fact of the matter is that tenure is one of those things that's misinterpreted so many times. It's not a job guarantee. And we are in a situation where we have to be agile. We have to be flexible, adaptable. And that does not give itself to that. And I said, I don't endorse and I just oppose that as a part of the process. And I told my wife, I called her at home that night. I said, I don't know. I mean, you know, this, that may have been a deal breaker with the whole thing. That actually the board came back later and said, no, because that was our position. We're not going to do that. So I would say, somebody looking for the perfect job, be authentic about who you are and what you are. Be honest about where you're coming from and what you want to do. Because ultimately, if you aren't being authentic about who you are and what you're trying to accomplish. And in part of that interview, I said, I really view a brand new community college as a huge opportunity to do business differently. To really change how a higher education is delivered, to really change how we deliver to students and what the new students are and where we move forward. And if you aren't authentic about that,
right,
you're probably in trouble trying to live. After that, you're living a lie if you're not authentic about where you're coming from and what you're doing.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
Tremendous leader. President. I mean, just being in the room here with you for 20 minutes, I mean, you just get us going, right? I mean, it's great. I mean, you are. And when you get in a room with someone like you, you're not talking about, hey, this is what I think we can do. You've done it.
Yep.
You've built this thing. And yeah, you've had some setbacks along the way. And I love how you get knocked down. You're like, okay, what's next? How are we going to react to this? But for someone listening out there, you've got a lot of experience behind you. Someone wanting to become a better leader. You mentioned authenticity, but talk to us about leadership and maybe a little bit about yourself. You're not going to be real comfortable doing this because I know you. But what are the traits you believe you possess that have made you be the leader that people want to follow? Tell our listeners what they might want to do in their own personal life to develop. Because people are blessed with different skills, different gifts.
Sure.
But if you want to become a better leader in your life, how have you done it?
Well, I'm going to drop back a little bit. We just had an exercise in one of our leadership Vistage group, a leadership group that I'm going through. And they asked us the highs and the lows over the last from birth to today. And I think character is something that you can't invent. Character is something you develop as you move along. I was real sick when I was 16 years old. Very few people know that. I had some major surgery. I was 67 pounds, 5'11" at 16 years old. I missed my junior year in high school because I was in the hospital. And they had to do some major surgeries on me. And I spent about a month in the hospital with the surgeries and recovery and everything. And there was a man that I learned a lot from named Joe Schwab. He passed away 2 weeks after I left the hospital. He passed away. Joe Schwab had the bed next to the window and I had the inside bed. And as a 16-year-old, I mean, I was a lot of pain. They'd cut me wide open. They'd pull all my guts out, put them all back, major physical problems. And Joe was one that he used to describe to me what was outside the window and what a great day it was and the people that he saw and the things that were going on and all those kinds of, you know, just to keep my spirits up. Because he said, you know, 16-year-old kid going through this major surgery. And then he would, when we got the soup, we'd get the vegetable soup, we'd spell our names in the soup. And he invented all kinds of creative, inventive things to keep me to keep my morale up, to keep me excited. And he said, you're going to make it, kid. You're going to make it. It's going to be okay. I found out later he died. I got out of the hospital and left. And as I left, I realized that the window that he was looking out to describe what was going on and what was happening faced a brick building. Faced a brick building. He was creating a whole new reality for me, positive, constructive, upbeat. And I think that when you talk about leadership, leadership has to be positive, constructive, upbeat, and you have to have the belief and the faith in yourself that a lot of people believe it if they can see it. A lot of people seeing it is believing it. And those two things back and forth are really keys. If you believe something strongly enough, you'll see it happen. It's called the law of attraction. Really successful people have a positive, constructive law of attraction. Now, it may not happen tomorrow, but if you believe in the law of attraction and you believe in positive, constructive, truthful, character-building things, those things will come to you. And no matter what we experienced at CWI over the years, that was one of the things I said, okay, we had a design for a 100-acre campus in Nampa with buildings and parking and infrastructure and everything. And I had to pull the whole team together after the last two or three months here and say, maybe that's not the vision, but there is a vision about how we're going to take care of students, customers, both the student customer and the student businesses, and how we're going to change this valley and be an economic engine for the entire valley. And it might be different than what we thought we were going to do, but we are still going to do it, and we're still going to be an economic engine. And in my mind, the vision's got to be big enough. I actually have a sign in my office. I said, if the dream is not impossible, don't bother sharing it with me. Because if the dream's not totally impossible, I mean, not so big, don't share little tiny dreams with me. Share the big dream with me and tell me how we're going to get there and how we're going to take it. And I think, quite frankly, leaders that are trying to aspire to be great leaders, know who you are, know what your character is, and then start building the law of attraction of moving in that direction. Is that fair? I mean, I probably didn't cover all the bases. I know I got a book with about 23 different things that it says, this is what you have to do to be successful.
That was amazing. That was amazing.
I want you to ask him about education, because usually on these podcasts, you're quite adamant and quite passionate about education.
Let's go there.
Okay.
You spent a lot of time, Bert. I spent 2 years everywhere.
Yep.
And everywhere I went, I'd ask people, what do you need? What's working? What's not working? Living rooms, businesses. I think it was well over 300 businesses we'd spend half a day with. And say, what do you need?
Yeah.
And I can't wait to get into this with you, because if you talk to businesses, it's talent. They need talent.
Skilled labor.
Yep. We have a higher education system, in my opinion, that rewards the wrong things. We've got a system that's antiquated. I don't know why we're so adverse to just rewarding the right behaviors in every other part of your life.
Yep.
If you create the right formula for success for your company, you reward the right behaviors. And in higher education, we don't. We frankly don't. Then along comes CWI, the little engine that could, right? And I think you're showing through proof that if you connect businesses, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. that great capitalism that makes us great as a country, and they need talent, they need kids ready to work, and you take education and you plop that being the vehicle that takes these wonderful kids, it's called our Idaho kids, and there's a conduit through an educational system that connects them to a job. That's the magic. Mm-hmm. It happens, and it happens seamlessly, because that's what's needed. And my goodness, it's just so hard. It's like you're hitting your head against a wall with how we spend our money sometimes. Just change the formula to reward results that keep Idaho kids in Idaho and Idaho companies.
Sure.
Elaborate for us here. But to me, it's so crazy.
I knew it was coming.
You get out there and you see it and you go, it just shouldn't be this hard. And then there's the all the rest of the politics stuff that gets behind it. But it just shouldn't be that hard, Bert.
It should not be that hard. And I think one of my real advantages when you said, how'd I get this job type situation, I think one of my real advantages is I spent 13 years in corporate life. And I lived business principles, and I dealt with business principles. Then I came back into education. And there's a real pushback from a lot of educators about, you can't assess certain things. There is accountability. There is responsibility. We've got some phenomenal faculty. I mean, we do. We have to figure out a way to make sure we're rewarding the faculty that are changing the horizon, that are changing the culture. And like tenure is built on a whole different structure than sitting down. Like in business, you say, who's your high performers? We have an interim provost right now. And one of the conversations that he and I had engaged in was rank. They were talking about we have instructors, assistant professors, associate professors, full professors. And there's a whole process of how they go through this and on and on and on. And he said, I don't really care. He says, if I find somebody that can do the job, I'm going to give them the job, and I'm going to give them the project, or I'm going to give them whatever it is. And Tommy, Amen. It gets back to what you're saying. How do we reward the ones that are actually changing the horizon, actually changing the makeup of what's going on? And a part of that is leadership. Leadership standing up and saying, okay, the structure's been in place for 100 years, and here's what we have to do now in order to move the institution forward. I've got faculty, and I will tell you, Michelle Bennett and Johnny Roaring, two of the key faculty that have literally turned the speech department around. You tell me some other school where it's a two-year school, okay? And the first students coming in, I actually taught a speech class the second year I was here with Michelle and Johnny. They helped me because of being the president, trying to cover all the other things. And Johnny and Michelle were the ones, they looked at the student and they said, no, you can do that. And here's how we're going to make that happen. So it wasn't a matter of just teaching a speech class. It was a matter of sitting down and saying, I believe in you. Here's the skills you have. Here's what's going to make a difference. And here's what's going to change your life because you can accomplish those tasks. And they worked with them one day at a time, making that happen. We got to get away from the traditional structures.
Yes. Yes.
We got to break. And again, education is in disruption. Like the banking business is in disruption, like a lot of other things. But education, for the first time in the 200, 300-year history, is in total disruption. And we need to embrace that and say, okay, how are we going to do business differently? Tommy, I got to tell you something. I was really encouraged. 2-3 weeks ago, the federal government.
You can call them feds. It's just me and Kevin.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
They came a little scared
when he said the feds.
Yeah, I know. It's like the feds.
That's what we call them all the time.
Right.
The Department of Education has come out and said, you know what? The Carnegie unit needs to be assessed. And the Carnegie unit was established 100 years ago when we were an ag society. And the Carnegie unit is, for 16 weeks, you go to class 1 hour a day for 5 days a week. And if you get a 70% or better, you get a C in that class, you move on to the next one. Well, Khan Academy, Saul Khan was the one that said, man, that's Swiss cheese. That's Swiss cheese education. It means that you don't know 30% of the information, they move you on to the next thing. Where's competency-based education? And I think now we're starting to get traction with competency-based education. I don't care if it takes you 6 weeks or 16 weeks, but if you can get and prove that you can demonstrate a competency in this, move them, get them to the next level. What we lose in America right now today, and I'm going to go off the reservation. What we lose in America today is the fact that our educational system is teaching to the middle.
Yeah.
We got the accelerated student that's bored to tears and they get in trouble. And we got the at-risk student that needs huge remediation. They're in trouble. And we're teaching to the middle because we can't move either one of these other along. We need to look at the system and change the structure of the system and say, if I've got a high, and I just heard somebody the other day, there was just a presentation the other day on, you talk about how impactful a faculty member can be. They had done research several years ago, but there was new research just came out, fifth grade instructional class. And they told the faculty members, the faculty member of the class, this is the best and the brightest students that you've ever had. This class will blow it out of the water. So what's the expectation? So the faculty member went in there, and by golly, at the end of that first semester, those students were blowing it out of the water. Oh, by the way, those were the at-risk remediation students that weren't supposed to succeed at all. I mean, we have to say, again, the law of attraction. If you believe something strong enough, if you work at it hard enough, you can make anything happen. But you got to believe in it, and you got to make it work. We have to believe that we can change this educational system to meet the needs of not only business and industry, but to meet the needs of raising our culture and our society.
But why is it so hard to scale it? You know, I'm sure you know Jeff Dillon, Wilder School District. You know Jeff, ran for superintendent.
Yes.
I love that guy. So I go out and visit his school.
It's Wilder, right?
Wilder. Yep. Yeah. So I go up. I roll out to Wilder. He meets me and. It just blows my mind.
He's knocking it out of the park.
I won't go into the whole experience because I spent an entire day there. But innovation everywhere, you know, competency-based learning. I mean, kids smiling. You pull these kids aside. I'll never forget the kid I met. So I'm going through. You know, they've done away with periods during the day.
Yep.
You can go if you're good at math. You know, just do your math and get through and test. If you're poor at English, you can spend more time with your English teacher. You know. Truancy went down, attendance went up, All these things happened. And I thought, well, I want to talk to a kid. So I grabbed this kid, big, burly football kid in the hallway and, you know, didn't want to talk to me. And I said, hey, can I talk to you about this? What did you think of all this disruption? And he looked at me and said, you know, I hated school. Couldn't stand it. I'd come here and his quote was, I wanted to put a hoodie up, sit in the back of the room and just get through it. I just want to get through and be done.
Yeah.
I said, what's happened with all this innovation around you? He says, well, as soon as I heard I could get through this as quickly as I wanted to, I couldn't believe it. He said, and then he got a big smile on his face. This was in the middle of the winter. He said, I've already graduated. He said, winter semester. I'm already graduated. And then I asked the magical question, okay, what's next for you, right? And he said, quote unquote, I'm already enrolled in a welding program. I'm working a part-time job to save money, and I'm going to CWI.
Really?
You know, at that moment, I looked over at Jeff, and I thought, oh, golly. So I went home that day, and Jeff sent me home with three books to read. One of them was The Answers in the Room, and it's a fascinating book on education that just talks about we have these successes. We know what works.
Yep.
But for some reason in education, it's really hard to scale success. It's really hard to learn from, hey, this is working. Let's do it somewhere else. So, you know, I'm hopeful. I guess when I sit here with you, I just it feels good because there's a guy that gets it out there that's saying, hey, there are answers. And we can connect these brilliant kids, these kids that want to learn to jobs. So I appreciate that. I'm going to ask you one more question along the lines of this. So you're up to 33,000 kids. Yeah. A couple of more statistics here. So I just was reading 97% of your career technical students report positive placements.
Right.
97%, right?
Correct.
2017, 2018, 1,716 degrees and certificates, right? Correct. So you're knocking it out of the park. You're actually taking kids and putting them in jobs here. Mm-hmm. For listeners out there, because you may have listeners out there who have friends or family or others that are looking to improve their life, tell us a little bit about options, innovations coming through CWI. What's currently in the community that would surprise us that we should know about what you're doing?
Well, thank you for that lead-in because there's huge things coming down the road in CWI. I'm really thrilled about this student from Wilder coming. Is he in our welding program or is he just in a welding program?
In a welding program, but he's going to come attend CWI. Yeah.
All right. One of the things you're going to see at CWI is we're not backing away for a minute from innovation wherever we can. And scaling up is a big issue. When you talk about a 200-year history of a structure, of a tradition, of an organization, 200 years is hard to break. And as a brand new community college, even then, I have to say, we find and run with the thoroughbreds. We find the faculty that want to. We find the staff that want to. And then we run with the thoroughbreds and we change the culture by doing it one person at a time. And hopefully over the next 5 years or whatever, we'll scale it up to where the whole organization is going that direction. Things you're going to find from CWI is we're going to literally, ABC is adaptable, blended, competency-based learning. We're going to start moving more and more of our programming to that structure. And I'm Sunday, I leave, I go to Seattle. I'm with the Northwest Accrediting Association, some of my favorite friends who are really into the Carnegie unit and the structures of things, and are discussing with them how we can break this barrier to better serve students, to deliver at their time and their place and touch those students that really want a different delivery system. The other thing we are instituting, and it's on a gradual basis as we can move through the programs, 8-week segments. We can get students into an 8-week course, get them experience, get them skilled, move them on, and as fast as they can move through. But competency-based education is one of those things. We have got to start embracing that, as that is the gold. That is the gold standard to make it work. You're going to watch CWI reform and realign itself literally in front of you as we're growing and developing. We can't get to 68,000 students with the facilities we have if we don't do business differently. So we are going to be doing business differently at the same time. You're going to find a lot more online. We're about 38% online programming right now. Hybrid is the other big one, where they'll only come to class once a week. And the rest of it's online, self-paced, as fast as they can go through it, then go through it. So we're encouraging those that want to learn. The other part of this thing that we haven't touched yet is we're the largest deliverer of dual credit. Credit in the high school, we only budgeted about 55,000, 59,000 credits that we were going to do, which we're the largest deliverer in the state right now. We're way over 60,000 credits already. Those students that are getting credits at their high school through CWI or through any of the dual credit formats, we had 130 some students last year that graduated from high school and the next week graduated from college with their AA degree. That's going to change the culture. That's going to change the dynamics. And a lot of those students aren't the students that are maybe even going to come to CWI. A lot of those students are going to go to BSU, U of I, Idaho State, Pepperdine, Stanford, Harvard. And by the way, CWI student 2 years ago went to Harvard. We had a student that graduated our speech debate program, and she is now at Harvard University. So it's not that these students coming out of community college are any less than anybody else. They're going to those places as well. Another person that you really ought to podcast with too is Gordon Jones, if you haven't already. Gordon and I have a working relationship there. I can't even share this one because it's not on the street yet, but there is something
breaking news on the Inspire Excellence
breaking news. There is another thing coming into the Valley that's going to help explode online learning and get in the hands. I have a 4-year-old grandson that he works off an iPod and an iPhone, a 4-year-old. And you think that by the time he hits first grade, he's going to have...
Hey, you might think that's a great thing. I have a 13 and a 16-year-old daughter, and I wish they didn't have iPhones.
So I got a 33. I also have a 33-year-old and a 38-year-old that won't talk on the phone, but I have to text them. That's the only way I can get through to them.
That's funny.
But again, it's a changing culture.
Yeah.
And some of the technology that's coming today, we need to embrace that. And we need to say, okay, how are we going to use it? The cost of education. There's more student loan debt in this country, $1.3 trillion, than there is credit card debt. How do we get that down? One of the things to get that down, open source.
Yes.
Free sources. I mean, it's a matter of faculty using that and taking those resources and saying, those are available everywhere. I just left a faculty workshop downtown where we got our library got a national award. Our library. Have you ever seen our library? I mean, our library.
Senior bookstore.
You've seen our bookstore. Well, yeah. The library is a little bit bigger.
Okay.
But it's online. It's got all those other kinds of accesses as well.
I know we're getting short. This goes so quick, Bert, but can I ask you one other question?
Sure, absolutely.
If for our listeners out there, a lot of business leaders are listening to this. If you have a business, whether it be in tech or welding or the trades, whatever, and I'm saying to myself, dang it, I want to work with CWI. What, for a business leader or an owner out there that's listening to this podcast, if they want to work with you to develop a program or to send kids there or whatever they want to do, what's the best way if I'm a business leader to work with CWI?
Call me, and depending on what program it is and depending on what industry it is, I will align you with certain people. Christy Root is our economic development person out on the street on an ongoing basis. She's working with industry and businesses all the time. And I will tell you, the last JFAC meeting, the Joint Budget Board meeting with the state, they said, well, how are your advisory boards working? Well, that's the old thing. The advisory boards are great. I don't need any more advisors. What I need is that business. I need that business to call me and here's what we need.
Wait a second. That's why I love this guy.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I love this guy. If we asked that question to some traditional educator, do you know what they'd say? They wouldn't say, call me. Let me tell you that. Call me and we'll set up a program.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure that that's clear.
That is open. That's what we're all about.
Well, there's a reason why you have 33,000 students and you're killing it.
President. That's what we're all about.
Okay. Bert, education is your passion. It's Tommy's passion as well. Yeah. But there is a challenge outside the Treasure Valley, and that's people graduating high school. And you're so great, because I was going to ask you about student loan debt and the dual credits, but you beat me to it. So how do we, I mean, if you were the state school superintendent, if you were the czar of education, how do we solve that problem, sir?
In the perfect world,
if you were on the throne, yes.
In the perfect world, you'd go out and you'd start meeting with these higher education institutions, like myself, even, and you would say, you've got to get to open source where you're not charging the student. I mean, we just had our special course fees reviewed by our board of trustees. We have a 5-member locally elected board, and we just went through all of these things, and they actually asked us and said, why is this fee going up? Why is this student fee going up? Our tuition's still at $139 a credit. We haven't raised that in 4 years, 5 years. But the fees are program specific. One of the answers to that question was, well, we put this fee up because the student, when they come and apply for financial aid, then they can get financial aid. And we've learned one thing. A student that has all of their materials and all of their supplies on day one of the class just accelerated to an 80% chance of being successful. Mm. If you look at the history of the student coming the first day of class, historically, you will have over 40% of the students don't have the book, don't have the material, they can't afford it. They paid the tuition. They can't afford to pay for all these other fees to get. And so it's a 2 or 3 weeks in before their financial aid comes and they get everything that they need. They're 3 weeks behind. They're 3 weeks behind in the program. We need to find ways to make sure the student has everything they need day one out of the ground. And we have got to figure out a different way of making sure that education is affordable. And that was the three things. Affordable and accessible is what our board said from day one, and that student success was the next measurement they were going to look at. How do our students succeed and how quickly do they complete and graduate? We have got to figure out a way to get this finance thing under control. We can't just like a lot of the other traditional education things. Well, you know, you're taking my son in Denver took anatomy physiology class, my youngest son. And I about fell off my chair when the textbook, I paid $800 and some for the course. I paid $980 for the textbook for anatomy physiology. Are you kidding me? The textbook was worth more, or it was more costly than the entire course. And we have to figure out a way to do business differently to get those resources out. We have got to find a way to control the cost of education and make sure that it's accessible to everybody. It's a game changer. You want to talk about economic development? You want to talk about skilled labor? Businesses, call me. Let's figure out how we break this barrier.
And Bert, finally, what inspires you? Although I think we have an idea.
My wife does daily.
That's the best answer we've heard.
It is, by far.
My wife has been, we got married 44 years ago, and my wife has been literally the changing the whole drive to get me. I was crazy for many years, and my wife really stabilized me and said, man, you got a lot. You got a lot of passion. You got a lot of commitment. You got to focus it, and you got to get it going down the road in the right direction. So my wife really has been the greatest influence on my life in terms of focusing me and getting me going.
Hey, well, thank you so much. I think for anyone listening today, I would just say, first of all, thank you. God bless you and all you're doing. And just keep driving, keep the message going, and in anything that we can do to help, let us know. And then the other thing I'd say is just if anyone out there, look what's going on, because I still think it's this hidden gem.
Do you want my cell phone number?
Yeah.
My cell phone number is 208-866-5179. Call me. I have 24/7. I'm Tommy. Thank you so much.
Well,
I really appreciate the opportunity to come. And Kevin, I really appreciate you allowing CWI and me to get in front of a bigger audience and get out there and know what's going on.
And all I'll say is, if you're out there listening and that doesn't inspire
call
you,
Bert.
You don't have a pulse. call Bert.
Yeah, call Bert.
Okay.
And thank you, Bert. We again want to urge everybody to inspire yourself to succeed. Great story today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.